Welcome to Parents' Perspective. A number of years ago, a little African-American boy was put into foster care in Los Angeles, California. As so many statistics show, that placement, especially for black males, can be a recipe for disaster. But this little boy was lucky. In that community lived a large family whose parents learned about the little boy and made room in their home for yet another child. It was a noisy, busy group, and the little boy seldom spoke. But he watched as his new siblings took responsibilities for chores and enjoyed the bond of music together. He even learned to play the piano. His new mother was constantly involved in civic issues. She felt that it was important for each person to contribute his or her skills to the community. The little boy learned well. He grew up to be the mayor of Washington, D.C. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about being an adoptive parent? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert in just about every aspect of being part of an adoptive family. Ms. Virginia E. Hayes Williams is the mother of 9 children, including Anthony Williams, mayor of Washington, D.C. A woman of many special talents and special connections and experiences, her personal story is of an American life, of an American family, and of people finding each other and taking care of each other. It's the story of a life that wasn't easy, but that is certainly triumphant. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Ms. Williams.
I'm very happy to be here.
What have you found in your family to be the biggest myth about adoptive parenting?
That adoptive children are different. And I think that's the greatest myth. When children are born and adopted directly into a family, they feel the same. The late bloomers, the late ones who come from foster care, now some of them are quite different. They all require the same thing. Lots of love, lots of dedication, discipline, and teaching them responsibility for themselves.
How are
children enriching their confidence in themselves.
And we agree 100%. How would you say children are different if they're coming out of a few years of foster care?
Most leading people today tell you that the first 4 and 5 years of a child's life are the most important. And they learn so much because the brain is new. And the child learns so much from the care they are given then in those first nurturing years. And love is the most important gift you can give a child, in my way of thinking. Unconditional love.
What's the greatest challenge, you would say, that adoptive parents face? Obviously, there are lots, but is there one that's a biggie?
Making sure the child feels secure. Making sure that child knows that they are very important to you and that you will love them no matter what they do, no matter how they are different from someone else. Because it is so easy to love a child that's absolutely normal. It's so easy to love a child who has no handicaps. It's so easy to love a child who can interact easily. But to love a child unconditionally means no matter what they look like, no matter how they act, you still let them feel that they are important to you. Their lives are important.
Do you find that adoptive children have more of a history, or at least in your experience, of trying to find out where the limits are? Is there a point at which you're not going to love me if I misbehave enough?
They're normal. My own children did that. They pushed the buttons. They pushed. Adoptive children are children. That's what we need to realize. If a child is insecure, someone helped to make him insecure or her insecure. Someone didn't give them that love that they needed. Basically, I think the most important thing, as I've said before, is to give them unconditional love. And remember, when you were a child, how you tested your parents, how you wanted to see how much you could get away with. Did you ever walk behind your mother and stick out your tongue? nobody saw you. Children are children. I want to erase that myth about good children, bad children. There are some children, I don't care what the parents do, they are their biological children. They turn to crime. They turn to stealing. They turn to other things. Many children, brothers and sisters who were born to the same parents, one will go up and one will go down. So children are children. Whether you adopt them, they are biological children.
Is it different to rear an adopted child in some ways from rearing your biological child? Your family, you might want to describe very briefly because there's quite a mixture.
Let's put it this way. I have 9 children, 9 college degrees, 7 with masters and above, and none of them are in the same field.
That covers a lot of fields.
They have 9 different fields, and they are all their own persons. They think for themselves. The most important thing I think a parent can do is teach children to think for themselves. But give them that guideline and then discipline them. They want you to say no sometime. I think sometime they push that button to see just how far they can go. Will she say no? Will she get me? Will I have to stand in the corner because I did this?
Now, in your household with all these children, not real far apart in age for the most part, was there a difference in how you dealt with your biological children and your adoptive children? Were there issues that the adoptive children raised?
No.
It was all the same.
Basically the same. Now, sometime since I brought Anthony in to our home.
Anthony is the mayor of Washington, D.C.
The mayor of Washington, D.C. Since I brought him into our home, I was pregnant with my third child when we took Anthony. But I always felt like Anthony was sent to me by God because all of my children are exactly 2 years apart. And Anthony fit right in there because that's the spot that was left for him.
Are there certain more vulnerable times in an adopted child's lifespan that parents should be aware of? We say sometimes when there's some issue, some major thing that happens in a person's life, then when something else comes up that's big, that first issue is relived. You know, things come back and back sort of like a spiral. Are there certain more vulnerable times that you know of?
Well, with Anthony, he had a pretty big head. There were times when children taunted and teased him that we had to let him know that a big head is capable of carrying a lot of knowledge. Because children can be cruel.
Yeah.
But I think the prerequisite almost is that the parents have to teach the children in dual families, you know, adopted and not adopted, not to be selfish, not to be envious. I think they watch the parents. The children watch the parents. And I think sometime you have to reach out a little bit more to that adoptive child just to make them know that they are just as important as those biological children. I think you do occasionally have to do that. But in doing this, you let the other children know also that they are important to you too.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on adoptive parenting.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Mrs. Virginia Hayes Williams about adoptive parenting.
Well, when a child has been adopted, somewhere along the line, you need to share with that child that he has been adopted.
Well,
how do you feel about that? How do you discuss that with a child?
Anthony didn't know he was adopted until he was 14. And all he wanted to know when he found out was, does Virginia know I'm adopted? And I said, yes, Virginia knows you're adopted. That's his older sister, who he loves, still adores, and he protected her. And Carla, who was his baby, I was pregnant with her. And I think the tenderness of being with Carla is what helped him an awful lot, because she couldn't do anything, and he'd go and feel our hands and feel our feet. And Louis, who just adored him and treated him from the beginning like he was my brother. And he also wanted to know, does Louis know I'm adopted? I said, yes, of course he does. And he said, then it doesn't matter.
Oh, isn't that precious?
That's terrific. It's interesting that the children didn't feel it was necessary to tell him. Mm-hmm. Usually kids are the way other kids find out, you know.
Carla, when Carla found out, someone just blurted it out to her that he is not your brother. He was adopted. And we had to go to school and get her. She cried so much, the principal called us and said, you better come and get her. She ran a fever for 2 days after she found out. She said, did Virginia know when they find out he's adopted? He has said it himself. They have never treated him differently.
What about blended families when you have what you had? Was there anything that you did yourself after this came about that, you know, you would say, gee, that wasn't bad. I did that. That was a pretty good thing.
Well, I gave up my opera career. Okay. I had just won an audition to sing with the New York Opera Company. And my husband told me, well, you know, that's the end, because you have to take care of this child, and because he's going to need a lot of love and care. But I honestly have never missed my opera career, because God blessed me with those children. And all of my children are my joy. They are my life. Sometimes people say, you talk about your children all the time. I said, but that is my life. That was my life. My children were my life.
How did you get the money to adopt a child when you adopted Anthony?
I never sang in a movie. And my husband said, we just bought a new house. We don't have any money, Virginia. If you want to adopt him, I tell you, if you get the money to adopt him without borrowing it from your father or letting them give it to you, you can have him. And the next day, they called me to work in Carmen Jones, the first time I ever worked in a movie. And the check for working in Carmen Jones was $2 more than we needed for the court papers and documents and things.
Goodness.
Talk about providential.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It was a blessing. Oh. And ever since Anthony's been in our life, there's never been a time when we needed something for the children that God didn't provide it. They call it miracles. We've had a lot of miracles. Like the day I went to the doctor and told him, I'm waiting for a check from the studio, because I'd done some background movie work and music. So I told him, he said, you're acting so sad. What's wrong? I said, well, Anthony and Louis in Loyola High School, and the check didn't come. And he said, well, go and tell them the check is coming, and it'll be okay. They'll wait for the money. He said, do you have enough to buy their books? And I said, sure, I have enough to get their books. So I went over to the school to talk to them. And when I got there, the first thing I saw was a picture of my doctor sitting on the wall. Their tuition had been paid, their books were there, and everything was ready for the entire year.
Oh, what a good person.
And so I put the money aside when I got the check, because I never had to worry about their tuition again, because I had that in the bank. And his brother ended up being number one loyal student when he graduated, his older brother. And Anthony was following in his footsteps.
Now, you kept going. You had these children, and they were growing up. But when you have 9 children, you still have some in their 30s now, right?
Yes. Well, the girl, 35, who was my godchild. I took her and raised her. And my children helped me really with her, because I was singing then and traveling quite a bit. And my husband was a jewel. I can't say enough about the man, because he loved his children dearly. And he was a rock. I called him the wind beneath my wings. And he was there for the children. He read to them. He bathed them on his time off. He took them to the park. He took them to playground. He just spent a lot of time in developing his children. and giving them confidence in themselves.
Sounds like there's one major message here besides the unconditional love, and that is that the most important thing you can do for children, all children, is give them your time, that the material stuff isn't so important.
Children don't care. Don't care. 1 year, I can tell you this in passing. 1 year, my husband had given the oldest boy a Lionel train set, and my son was holding on to him. He said, "Daddy, don't go to work. It's Christmas. Don't go to work." He said, "If you want things like this Lionel train set, I have to go to work." And do you know, my son packed that box up and never played with that whole Lionel village.
Oh, my goodness. Because he wanted his father to stay.
He wanted his father.
What?
More than he wanted that Lionel train set. We don't realize how much children want us.
And in today's world, boy, is that a major message.
Yes.
Today's world, there's so much, I think because of exposure to commercial things, because of media is in our faces.
Sometimes we think we have to substitute things for people.
I have two grandchildren who are the most secure children of the entire set of children. I have 10. And those are the children whose parents stayed at home. Whose mother stayed at home. Now, they had the education and the capability of working, but they stayed home with their children and taught children values. And they don't buy all those expensive
contraptions
and things that the other parents give to their children. They say themselves that they notice the difference in the children who have their parents with them. Both parents, so, and all children cannot have both parents. So I think we have to give more time to these children whose mothers have to work, you know. And that's why I always advocate that aunts and uncles and neighbors, we need all of them to give those children that umbrella of love. We used to do that.
It has to be the responsibility of more than just the nuclear family.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because we have so many children today. So many foster care children are so damaged that they need this psychological help to help them bridge the gap of neglect into an area of care. They need to know that there was neglect because sometime due to ignorance, sometime due to the situations of life, they need to know that this was not because of anything you did. Mm-hmm. This is because of the circumstances that you were born into. This is because your mother was incapable of keeping you, as Anthony's mother was. Her family would not let her keep it. Her family would not let her keep her child. As a matter of fact, she was very ill because she didn't want to give her child up. But she was 17, and at that time, you just did not, 50 years ago, you just did not, 54 years ago, you did not bring a child into a middle-class family. You just did not do it without a marriage.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on adoptive parenting.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Ms. Virginia Hayes Williams about adoptive parenting. Now, you're referring to an organization through which we met. Do you want to give that as a suggestion? We like to give resources for our listeners.
Oh, yes. CASE, it's called, and it's www.adoptionsupport.org. It's adoptionsupport.org.
CASE stands for the Center for Adoption Support and Education, Incorporated. And this is a very highly regarded and wonderfully active organization on behalf of adoptive families.
Absolutely, because what they do is they prepare the foster child mentally and emotionally to be adopted. And then we have the Congressional Coalition on Adoption Institute, and that's www.ccainstitute.org. And they are helping foster parents take care of children and helping to promote them going into adoption. Now, these foster parents are nurturing foster parents, and they are making the transition from one caring group to another caring group, which I like, which is what we have to do. And that's why I love CASE, because they are a bridge.
They're very supportive of families, adoptive families. Long after the adoption, they're still there with the activities for the whole family, for the blended family as well. It's really
helpful. And Maxine Baker of Freddie Mac is starting a new organization, and my son is a part of it. It is helping foster parents in their role as foster parents.
And that's through Freddie Mac?
Through Freddie Mac.
The Congressional Coalition on Adoption Institute, is that something that's accessible to parents nationwide?
Yes. And that is www.ccainstitute.org. And it's called CCAI. Okay. And it's a nonprofit organization that is all over. Annually, they honor foster care parents from all over America, from every congressional district. A congressman will have one or two people from his state come to Washington, D.C. once a year to be honored. And they are exceptional people. So it's done every year. And Freddie Mac is one of the main supporters for that.
Well, we are so fortunate today that we have a wonderful, well-spoken supporter and a terrific person who has had such wonderful experiences as an adoptive parent. Virginia Hayes Williams, thank you so much for being with us.
I have enjoyed it, and I feel blessed that God gave me the opportunity to work with His children. And I feel blessed that I had six children of my own, and I believe that my life has been so enriched because I shared it with these children. Because now I always tell people, maybe I sacrificed my life for Anthony, but my husband died just 50 years, died just before Anthony ran for mayor of this city. And I came into this city and I've had a new life. So I always like to let people know, maybe I saved Anthony's life, but now he has in turn saved mine. So you never know what you're doing when you're giving yourself to in service. I want to end with a poem my mother gave me, words of wisdom. There's a destiny that makes us brothers. None goes his way alone. All that you send into the lives of others comes back into your own. And I think Anthony has overpaid me. And that's our family, and given been a source of great pride.
That's terrific. And speaking of gifts, our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. With your name and mailing address, and mention show number 272. Tell us what station you're listening to if you can, since we're airing all over the world. It's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. We'd like to remind you about some important toll-free numbers for parents and kids. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. And the National Runaway Switchboard, 1-800-621-4000. 1-800-621-4000. If kids call there for help and advice, or they can call there to contact parents. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.